You look cute with your hat, Aaron.
Well, that's a great way to start the show. I look cute with my hat.
No, you do. I'm all, oh, hi, Aaron. What's up?
Yeah, it's a Quail Hollow golf shirt, a golf hat, so it's not very cinematic.
Well, it's very flattering.
Well, thank you. Well, it's really unflattering. I haven't showered yet. I'm wearing a hat so my mess of a hair doesn't show up. So thank you for complimenting me on being lazy. So we're on Criterion Now 32, and that was Becky Deanna. I can't believe we have never podcasted before. Like, it seems like we've had so many near misses or close calls that just didn't work out.
Yeah, I think we were going to do we were going to do Autumn Sonata. We were going to do Fanny and Alexander. I think that's probably it. But we're finally making it happen.
Yeah, well, I didn't do either of those shows. That's why. Sometimes it's like, oh, I want to do this movie. I want to do that movie. But, you know, you only have so much time.
And right.
We also have Martin Kessler. Hello, Martin. We've done a lot of podcasts together, haven't we?
Hello. Yeah, I lost track how many. a couple.
Probably less than a dozen, but more than six, probably. I don't know.
More than a few, yeah.
More than a few, yeah. But it's always good. It's been a while, so it's good to have you back.
Yeah, it's always the pleasure to be on. Thank you for having me.
Likewise. And so Becky is, well, you're a good friend of Wrong Reel. I always want to say Wrong Wheel, which is wrong. It just, you know, it's alliterative. But you also,
nice.
Are we allowed to talk about where you work? You work
for,
okay, for Sony?
Yeah. I work at Sony Pictures. I'm in the International Marketing Partnerships Group. So essentially what I do is we tie in our films with third-party brands like McDonald's, Kellogg's, Audi, things like that. It's very fun, and it's like launching a brand new business with each movie, and because every movie's different, you got to figure out, you know, who's in the film and like themes that would work well with a brand. So it's great. And right now we have a global promotion with McDonald's in with the Emoji movie. So feel free to go there and pick up your Emoji toy with your kids meal.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, that's your job. Happy Meals.
Yes.
If your Happy Meal has a movie, Becky might have had a hand in it.
Yeah, if it's a Sony movie, I definitely had a hand in it.
Cool. And Martin, of course, is with Flixwise, and but you're kind of a free agent. You do a lot of things, and I guess now that Pauline is in Madison, I guess, are you going to carry the load a little bit more, or?
A little bit. There's a few episodes where I'm hosting the mainline Flixwise.
Cool.
I also have the spinoff Flixwise Canada.
Yeah.
We have a big episode. It might even be out by the time people hear this with Dave Eves, who's been on this show, talking about lo-fi science fiction. So you mentioned Stalker and Legete and a bunch of great, interesting science fiction films. Recently, we had an episode with David Blakesley where we talked about the two Robert Bresson films, A Man Escaped and Pickpocket. I think that's a really good episode.
I think he mentioned those. And I think, but the one thing is, you record so far in advance, I think they hadn't come out yet.
we have a few that have been recorded that are Criterion related that should be out in the not too, too distant future. There's L'Eclisse coming up, Sans Soleil. A couple titles that should be familiar if people collect Criterion.
Cool. And you're also a filmmaker, and are you working on any projects you can talk about, or?
Yeah, I'm doing a half-hour documentary about an artist for the Art Gallery of Sudbury. That's my sort of bigger project at the moment, and I've done one similar one last year, so it's nice to have something where I can be a little bit creative and document and edit and go through all the things that a filmmaker is supposed to do.
Cool, yeah. Those are all things filmmakers. Well auteurs, I guess. Not all filmmakers edit and all that.
No.
All right, well, I guess let's just get right into it. Are you guys ready?
Yeah.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, anything you want to get off your chest? Anything you've been doing that you want to just throw out there before we start?
Yeah, I want to say something. I just did a podcast last weekend on Wrong Reel on Terminator 2 Judgment Day, which was really exciting because it was an opportunity to talk about my favorite movie of all time. And I know your listeners are very much in tune with, you know, even if your favorite filmmaker is Kurosawa or Preston Sturges or Eric Rohmer or Bergman or Tarkovsky, I feel like the one thing that brings all of us film fans together is Terminator 2, because I don't know I don't know anyone who's a cinephile or just a movie fan that doesn't love this movie. I've met so many people over the years that have asked my favorite movie, and when they find out, they're like, oh, that's a great choice.
Makes sense.
So so I don't feel like it's bizarre to mention it on your show. But it was exciting because we did the podcast and it got a tremendous response. And then on the day after I recorded it, this website, Terminator Fans, contacted me and said, hey, could you do a review of the movie for us? So I took an opportunity to write like a personal essay about the movie. And it was titled Terminator 2 Judgment Day, the film that changed my life.
Wow.
So and that got a crazy response, too. Now, I've connected to so many people on Twitter that are fans of the film, and like I was geeking out earlier with you two, letting you know that Robert Patrick, the T-1000, following me on Twitter.
Very cool.
I know.
And he followed me because of my essay. He really liked it. Yesterday he liked, I went to the first USC football game of the season, and he I tweeted about it and he liked it. I'm like, wait, he's actively liking my tweets about non-Terminator stuff.
Yeah.
So anyway, it was a great week. It was tremendously because that movie means so much to me. It was great to talk about it and write about it and have such a warm response back. So that's been one of the highlights of my year so far.
Yeah, we'll put the link in to that article in the show notes too. So that's awesome. But I like you said, I think everybody likes Terminator 2. It's hard not to like. But you're also really into Bergman. Obsessively into Bergman. I think you're probably one of the biggest Bergman scholars or fans that I know, and I know a lot of Bergman fans.
I he's like my favorite filmmaker of all time, and I've seen 41 of his films, and I just adore him, and I love talking about him. But it is funny over the just being on Twitter the last several years and talking about film, I'm starting to realize I'm like, oh, I actually do know a lot about. I never saw myself as someone who knew like more than anyone else, but it's been cool to realize that maybe I know more than I thought I did. So.
You know a lot. And you're also a big fan of Albert Brooks. So that's very convenient for today. So, 'cause we're going to talk about Lost in America later. And Martin, of course, you're a big fan of Czech films. So we're going to talk about some of those too. So good timing. Good job.
Hey.
And choosing this show this week. All right. Well, so we'll start with last week. So last week in film circles, I'd say Alicia Malone was probably our biggest guest. She's the host of Filmstruck, so she's, we talked to a couple directors, but she's, I think she got more play and more love than a lot of people. She's just so charming; everybody loves her, and so I think universally everybody loved that show. So that felt pretty good, and she was a great sport. Did you all get to listen to it yet?
Yes.
Yeah, I loved the episode. It was great. I actually have a film, a book club that I'm in. And so it's just with a few Hollywood executives are in this group. It's about five people. And we only read books based on Hollywood. So they're fiction or nonfiction.
Cool.
We've read a lot of great books over the last few years. And I cannot wait to recommend her book. Her book sounds amazing. Backward and in Heels. I think it's great. And so I might even just buy it and bring it to our next book club meeting and be like, hey, this is what it looks like. Let's read it. 'Cause we're about to read the Sherry Lansing book. But I think it's great. And she was so charming. Like you said,
she's awesome.
Just a wonderful episode. And I just think she's living the dream. I mean, to be able to like get paid to go to Telluride and,
yeah,
hear
my jealousy?
I think you heard a collective jealousy across all listeners all over the world. I like want to be her. She's amazing.
Yeah, so I'm going to try to put together a book review of that book because I engage with it so much, and it's not a very large. It's like 250 pages. It's a pretty quick read, but it's very substantive. It's full of a lot of great content, but. So I had like a pages of notes because I just engaged with it so much. But of course, on a hour 15-minute podcast, you're not going to spend 45 minutes talking about the nuances of females and inclusion and we touched on it a little bit. But I have so much left over. I think I'm just going to write a piece. So hopefully I'll finish that before this show goes up, and I'll put it in the notes. So Martin couple weeks ago, I had your buddy, Pauline, and her new professor, which I hope I didn't break any rules with having her
Lady P. That, yeah.
So yes. That was, Lady P, or I could not call her Lady P because I think of her as Pauline. I kept on fighting with that. And, of course, Professor Dr. Jeff Smith, who is also on Filmstruck. So we've had a pretty big run here. So it's been pretty fun. So, did you enjoy listening to them? And speaking of envy.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure to listen to. No, you're making me feel like I'm in very good company. So,
well, you guys are. You're
interesting
both,
while I'm here. Yeah.
You're both terrific guests.
Thanks.
All right. Thank you. Oh, I really enjoyed recording those for you. I think we'll probably slow down a little bit. We have a couple projects coming up, but I'll get to that in a little later. So let's get into the show, if you don't mind. We have a lot to get through, and no worries if you haven't seen everything or don't know everything. That's pretty common. I haven't seen a lot of this stuff. But this week we have Rebecca by Alfred Hitchcock is coming out on Tuesday the 5th. And we've had a little break. A couple weeks ago we had Luc Plazon and Sid and Nancy come out. But we'll have a pretty big September in the as far as new releases coming out. I'll go in alphabetical order here just to keep it orderly. But Becky, any thoughts on these three?
I have a thought on Rebecca, because I saw it a long, long time ago. But one of the book club I was telling you about, we actually read a book called Alfred Hitchcock by Peter Aykroyd.
And there was
a really funny, not a funny story, but a bizarre story about Rebecca that I wanted to share because I just thought it was fascinating. From the book, but Joan Fontaine's in that film, and she had a lot of anxiety on set. And Hitchcock thought, you know, that it would be great that she should become more fearful and really anxiety ridden, just like the character she was playing. Mm-hmm. So what he did was he constantly told her that the rest of the cast didn't like her, and he was the only one that appreciated her. And then I guess it worked because
he gaslighted her.
Yeah. But it worked because it seemed very real in the film that she was walking around as like an underappreciated second wife. So I thought that was interesting. And another thing that he did to her was she would cry so much that like she would be crying out. She couldn't cry anymore. And so he once said to her, like, what would it take to make you start crying again for the scene? And she's like, well, maybe if you slap me. And he did.
Wow.
And I guess she just started bawling. So those are two really, interesting anecdotes about the charming Hitchcock in the movie Rebecca. So I thought it'd be fun to share that because that book's really terrific. If you, it came out a few years ago or I think mm-hmm. recently. So I definitely recommend it.
I have it on my Kindle, but I have a lot of stuff on my Kindle, so I haven't cracked that. But it's funny that you tell that story because Alfred Hitchcock was pretty tough on his leading ladies. And so, and then we last week had a feminist who his favorite filmmaker is Alfred Hitchcock. So it's tough to reconcile those. It probably was not a pleasant experience for Fontaine, but she got a career out of it and a good movie came out of it. So she had, although I think Fontaine had a couple issues. I know there's the rivalry with her sister there. So Martin, any thoughts on Rebecca, Luc Plazon or Sid and Nancy?
Luc Plazon, I'm really curious to see. I haven't seen it before. And the Eclipse set for Sacha Guitry, it really has me curious. Plus, it's I think it's only like 85 minutes or something like that, 87 minutes maybe, which is the key to my heart for trying a film I haven't seen before. So
short movies rock.
I might just blunt by it. Plus, I really like the artwork for the set, usually like the little bit more cartoony style or the caricature style I'm not as interested in, but the Luc Plazon artwork I found just really charming, those faces, so I think I might check that one out.
It's a very, very fitting artwork. It's not a masterpiece. It's not his best movie. Well, although, I don't know. He had some good ones, but
he's probably best known for his 30s films.
Yeah.
And this is post-war, right?
Story of a Cheat was a big one, and there's some others. But, but it's so much fun. But I wouldn't expect, like, a Renoir, not the greatest filmmaking ever, but it's still
a
very
watchable. It
sounds like it might
be a good companion piece to maybe Monsieur Verdot. Like, it might be fun to watch those two together.
Yeah,
it sounds a little similar.
That would be a good double feature. Hey, Criterion or Filmstruck, why don't you put that as a Friday double feature? So, all right, well, this week we had had the newsletter clue, which was a picture of the one and only classical legendary singer. Well, I guess it depends on who you ask if he's legendary, but but he's definitely popular, is Tom Jones. He played Vegas a lot, so that's a connection with this episode. So, yeah, I think
that was one of the easier clues, right?
It's pretty easy.
Yeah.
Even I got it, but I had to play possum because don't want to give it away for people that didn't know. And there were a couple of jokes that it might have been Mars Attacks because he was on in that movie. Is that a Sony movie? I forget.
I don't know, actually.
I don't either.
I feel like it could be. I don't know. It's probably not good that I don't know that, but I don't.
I won't tell anybody.
Yeah.
it probably isn't, but... he sang a bit on there. I forget the scene, but he was did make kind of a cameo, if I remember. It's been a while since I've seen that, but I do enjoy that movie quite a bit.
Doesn't he make their heads explode?
That's right. That's right. Yeah. So this is 1963. Tony Richardson. He's been in the collection before. Well, last year with A Taste of Honey, and I think he has some Filmstruck presence. But there was I think Criterion acquired the rights to his collection, so I will see a lot more from him. This one, of course, was a Best Picture winner, and not everybody's favorite film. So I haven't seen it.
I haven't seen it either.
Yeah, I'm not too excited for it, but I'm willing to give it a shot. So have you seen it, Martin?
Maybe on television a long time ago. I don't think it left a huge impression on me, so I can't really say. Maybe if I rewatched it now, I'd have different feelings. I don't know.
Well, I will say that my wife watched it, and she said it's garbage.
Okay, that's
she didn't use those words.
Bottom of the list now.
I think that kind of light movie might be up her alley more than soccer or something like that. But yeah, so I trust her opinion. A lot of people on our social media said it was. I don't know if anybody used as strong wording as garbage. No, some people did. Some people said it was pretty. People don't hold back in our circles. But anyway, it's coming out. It should look good. I think it has good color from what I understand. So hopefully there's a good restoration there. Yeah, it's worth seeing, I guess. So I'll move on. Tom Jones, it's coming at some point. And then another piece of news. There were some Phantom pages that came up. And I don't know if you are up on those, Becky, but they're just, well, we talked about them on Alicia's show last week, so hopefully that gives you an idea. But there were a whole bunch of Czech filmmakers, so there were some that I knew, but we just fortunately have one of the biggest experts on Czech film that I know, maybe on this planet. So Martin, do you want to talk about some of these filmmakers?
Make my head big. A number of them. I'm kind of curious about what film it might be that could potentially be coming, because a few of them already have films through the Eclipse set, like Vera Titilova, who directed Daisies. Like, there were some rumors that perhaps Daisies could be turned into a mainline Criterion release, maybe upgraded to Blu-ray since there's a HD transfer out there. But she's had a number of other films that I think are worth maybe putting into the Criterion collection. Fruit of Paradise, some of her more recent films like Traps, I know have been released on DVD, or maybe some of her early shorter films like Bag of Fleas could be. One thing that kind of has me excited is that they're not all filmmakers associated with the Czech New Wave. Not that Criterion's like overflowing with Czech New Wave films, but I think that's the thing that most people associate with Czech cinema, and even though I think those are some of the greatest films ever made, it's going to be exciting if Criterion releases a film like Distant Journey, which was one of the first films to deal with the Holocaust, or Ikari XB1, which is I think maybe the most important science fiction film that's least seen. It was hugely influential on the design elements for 2001, A Space Odyssey, Star Wars, Alien. Mm-hmm. So you can see its design elements disseminated through basically all of modern science fiction. Three Wishes for Cinderella is a film that could be a possibility. It's a really great rendition of the Cinderella fairy tale where Cinderella she kind of kicks ass. She's got a crossbow, and it's a lot of fun. I think it's become a really popular Christmas movie, especially in places like Germany. So hopefully people will see that. And I'm pretty sure there's already a European Blu-ray for it, so yeah, it might not be too difficult to release. I think I'm trying to think what else could be coming. I kind of wish Criterion would release some of the Czech films from the 1930s. I've been going through, and there's like a lot of Czech films from that classic era that are getting remasters and restorations recently, like Tonka of the Gallows, which was the first post-synchronized sound Czech film, which, like, it looks gorgeous. It's a really incredible film. So I'm sort of hoping that maybe something like that might be a possibility. But I'll be curious if there's a wave of Czech filmmakers on the way. I don't know if... I guess they're probably... They're done with the Eclipse sets, but I know at one point some people were discussing if maybe there might be a sequel to the Czech New Wave box set because there was some kind of a deal made. But I would love it if a number of these films had proper Criterion releases.
Yeah, there was a deal. I think they acquired 30. It was a few months ago, and there were some headlines about it. So 30 Czech films. What's interesting, I looked at those, and I thought it was weird. And by the way, how do you pronounce the Daisy's filmmaker's name again?
Vera Titilova.
All right. Thank you for my new opening. Yeah, I just use that too, so I can learn how to pronounce it. A Pichapong Weerasethikal. There you go.
Oh, that's a great one.
So now, if anybody speaks Russian, Polish, you're welcome on the show. I'm going to use you for your pronunciation skills. So, the Reddit sleuths, they speculated that there would be three wishes for Cinderella. Of course, Ikari XB1, which I agree, very, very important film, very underseen. I have the DVD from Region B. It's excellent. And then Transport from Paradise and or The Fifth Horseman.
These are both really powerful films about the Holocaust. I don't know. These films, they're so different. It's kind of hard to imagine them being released as a box set. I think some people were saying, oh, maybe there's going to be some big box set. But I think they're all kind of too different. Like, they're not all Czech New Wave. They're not really that connected. I kind of don't think it's going to be a box set for these.
Yeah, you never know, because they have the rights, but they could just put a bunch of them on Filmstruck. That's one thing. These are not household names, and even though they put out some obscure filmmakers, they're not always, you know, they have to think about what sells. They're not going to put out 6 months of Czech filmmakers. That would probably tank the business. Right. So there's also Something Different was the Titilova, which I will be able to pronounce now in 2 months. Diamonds of the Night. Yeah, it was Nimitz, Distant Journey.
Another Holocaust film.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah, two guys who escaped from a train during the war.
You mentioned Distant Journey, so that would be interesting. And then All My Countrymen and or the Cassandra Cat. And then
probably All My Good Countrymen. That's a really interesting one. It was it's almost like a new wave period film that was, I think it was banned actually for a long time because it was made just during and completed just after the Soviet invasion. So I don't think that one was ever properly released, but there was a Facets DVD of it a couple of years ago. So that would be nice if that one had a proper release.
Yeah, that was the case with Valerie too. I'm kind of amazed that
also
one came
out.
It's got
Matushka in it, the famous singer. So that'd be cool.
And From Saturday to Sunday, which yeah, a lot of these I don't know. So I'm glad you're here, Martin. And then The Cry. So that's, of course, how do you pronounce his name?
Yerish, who did Valerie and Her Week of Wonders, right. And the joke. That's in the Eclipse set, right?
So yeah, I thought it was weird that they had new pages for all these. By the way, Becky, do you have anything for this?
Yeah, it's weird.
I'm enthralled by this whole conversation.
Awesome. Okay,
so
hopefully the listeners are
too. I have nothing
to
add of importance, but it's very educational, and I will continue to listen to it.
Well, we do
the joke, that's another one that could have been maybe bumped up from the clips into a regular release because it's politically pretty important. It's a story by Milan Kundera, so like
yeah, Unbearable Lightness of Being author. I'm a big fan of Kundera, but I have not seen them film, so. You'd recommend it?
The Eclipse that I would recommend people buy that because that's so many of those films in that set I think could have been mainline releases. Like sometimes I've found like in the past, some of the Eclipse sets have some of the filmmakers' best works. Like I'm a big fan of the Kenji Mizoguchi set because it's like three of my favorite Mizoguchi films. You know, so sometimes what goes into the Eclipse set, I think sometimes you can still find really, really great films in there, even though people might assume that it's like the cast-offs.
Right, yeah.
You know, I think that's not the
case.
The
first Eclipse set was Bergman that they ever did.
Yeah, yeah. So popular filmmakers. And I think if in this case, this one's become so popular that I think that if they had to do it again, they probably would have done individual releases or at least split out Daisies and maybe The Joke or maybe Pearls of the Deep. Maybe, I don't know. So anyway, well, Czech filmmakers, looks like this is, I mean, we knew that they'd be coming eventually, so this is probably a confirmation that they'll be coming soon.
What a time to be alive.
What a time to be alive. That's right. We get it. And I love the, I have not seen, you know, I've seen probably a dozen Czech films and mostly from the new wave, but I pretty much universally appreciate all of them. Some are challenging. That's like a Report on the Party and Guest is a good movie, but very challenging, very politically volatile, but yeah, good stuff. So hopefully some good things coming from there. Well, you got anything else to add, Martin, on Czech filmmakers, or you want to move to the next thing?
Oh, I think I said a lot.
But that's why you're here, to say a lot. All right. Well, you helped me pronounce stuff, so I appreciate that. And yeah, it's all about me, right? We also had the Philadelphia Story was announced last month. It was the previous, I believe it was the previous Clue. And so it had a nice blue cover.
I actually like the blue cover.
I do too, but they changed it. It's now black and white. And I think that there was some speculation that it was maybe to match up with His Girl Friday or maybe another one. I really have no comments. I'm just throwing that out there. But Becky, have you seen Philadelphia Story?
Yeah, it's great.
All right.
Yeah. Definitely. I mean, new covers are always exciting. So, I'm down.
Yeah.
But it's a very good movie. I really like it a lot.
I can't wait to check it out. So, yeah, it seems, I think that's October, right? Yeah, that's October.
Yeah.
Or is it November? It's
November. November 7th. That's a little ways away.
A little ways away, yeah. So.
Yeah, it looks a little bit more like the His Girl Friday cover now. It's like, maybe if you look at it, almost like a desaturated blue. Mm-hmm. It has sort of an inky look. It's not quite black and white, maybe. It's hard to tell from the website. But,
yeah, a little grayscale. It probably will bounce a little bit more off the page.
Maybe it'll have a bright
page.
Pink spine and surprise ever.
You never know. You never know. Gilda did. Actually,
it's happened.
Yeah. So, okay, Philadelphia Story. And so it'll have a new cover. And then, really, this isn't really a news piece, but there was a greatest comedies of all time list from the BBC. And by the way, I'm going to put the Film Stage link in the show notes because I believe the BBC link had you had to click for either 1 or 10. I'm not a fan of that on the internet. People put your, especially if it's a 100 list, put it in like at least 3 pages. So, but I thought this was a pretty good list. Did you get to see this list? Becky?
Yeah, I think it's a great list. I was impressed that that Preston Sturges had 3 films on it, that Woody Allen had 3 films. I mean, I feel like they did a really nice balance of comedy directors. Mm-hmm. Up until now, like Wes Anderson's on that and Carl Reiner. I'm a little bummed that Albert Brooks isn't on there. I think he deserved to have at least 1 film. On the list. You know, I would prefer if all 7 of his movies were on here. he's the only real glaring omission that I see. I mean, I definitely think like Modern Romance or Lost in America should have been on there, or Defending Your Life, which is my favorite Albert Brooks movie.
Yeah.
But it is nice to see that Broadcast News is on there, which is my second favorite film of all time and stars Albert Brooks, and he's amazing, and was nominated for Academy Award for Best Supporting Actor in that movie. So I was happy with the list. I thought it was really nice and well balanced. I also love that Clueless is on there and Fish Called Wanda.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah,
it's easy for these lists to swing one way, you know, that all mainstream or all art house. But it was a good combination of art house and classic.
Mm-hmm.
And number one was Some Like It Hot. So in our film circles, there was a little bit of I don't know about backlash. I think that film, maybe it's because of the transgender, not really transgender, the cross-dressing nature of it. Mm-hmm. Maybe it hasn't aged very well today, but I think it's a good film. Maybe not the best film ever. I see Playtime on here. Of course, I'd have that probably my number one or higher.
Yeah.
I mean, higher than what it was. No, you can't get much higher than number one. Bringing the Baby is a big one, To Be or Not to Be.
Yeah, that's a great one.
But then they have Lebowski, which they should. Groundhog Day, right. Life of Brian. So very mainstream. City Lights, Monsieur Hulot.
Modern Times.
When Harry Met Sally, why not? Tootsie. So, yeah, it is a very, very thoughtful list. Of course, these lists not going to please everybody. Oh, Daisies is on there near the bottom.
Daisies is on it. Yeah. One thing I like about this list is usually when you see top 100 lists like AFI, they tend to be very Anglo-centric the mostly English language films. So it was sort of nice seeing a number of films on here that weren't English. A couple I thought sort of stretched the definition of comedy a bit.
Is Daisy's a comedy?
I guess so. I'd call it a comedy. Pulp Fiction, maybe. I don't really think of that as a comedy, but actually, I guess somebody does.
Amarcord, I wouldn't really say. Yeah. I mean, they have comedic moments, but I wouldn't. There is a fine line. Kind of Lost in America, I would call that a comedy, but you could, it could be a drama with comedic elements. So yeah, but then
yeah, it's nice that they have a Tony Erdmann. That's a very nice new addition, and that movie was hilarious, but also very dramatic. So yeah.
Yeah, but I definitely call that a comedy.
Yeah, very, definitely. Very funny movie. I absolutely love that film. That was a Sony release, which, by the way, Mars Attacks was not. I looked it up. It's Warner Brothers.
I saw it, too. I'm
not going to get fired. You're all good. Yeah. For not knowing that.
If you were going to be fired, I would have edited it out. Would not let that happen. So. All right, so that was a good list. BBC, I'd say they have some credibility. Some places don't. So good job, BBC. People in the community, if you want to mention your favorite comedies of all time, I'm sure everybody has a lot of opinions. Maybe we'll do a poll. Let me think about that. Anyway, so actually, nice transition. We were going to talk about Lost in America for this episode, which I just watched last night with my wife. Speaking of short movies, that's the way I got her to do it, because it's only an hour and a half. So she's like, okay, I'm game. So if you don't mind, I think actually, Becky, you hinted at this earlier. So we both work in corporate America.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you work, of course, for a film studio. You have a very, very awesome job.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I work for an insurance company, and I kind of joke that I'm a corporate stooge. It's kind of self-deprecating, but playfully. It's a very, very corporate job. I do dress nice. I wear slacks and button-up shirts and jackets sometimes. But crucifying my credibility here, but my film geek cred. But yeah, I drive like a white Lexus hybrid, so that's me. I'm basically very, very similar to the character, to Albert Brooks's character in Lost in America, except for I don't earn as much as him. I think $100,000 in 1985, that'd probably be about $150,000 these days.
Yeah, probably.
That's a good salary. So I was able to identify a little bit. I love my job, though. In fact, it's terrible to talk about it, and I'm not going to, because it sounds boring as can be, but it's actually very, very thrilling to look at what people do in America. So anyway, I won't even get into it. But and Martin, I don't think you have a corporate job, do you?
No, I don't. But it's hard not to have that fantasy about just dropping out and buying a motorhome and just traveling. And being free. I think probably most people have that fantasy at some point. I think if I had a motorhome, it would look more like the vampires in Near Dark. But it's sort of funny, this idea of wanting to drop out and be completely free, but also not wanting to give up luxury. Mm-hmm. That's one thing I found very funny about Lost in America, is this idea that you can drop out and still have your nest egg and still have your security. Yeah. And that sort of contradiction between trying to keep both the freedom and the security at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that nest egg is really, really important, and he keeps on bringing that up. And I love how he compares himself to Easy Rider, but he has $150,000, which today would probably be $250,000. He might have even had more. Becky, you're shamelessly not that there is any shame in it, but you're shamelessly a big fan of Albert Brooks. Is he your second favorite filmmaker? Is that safe?
Yeah,
to say?
My second favorite filmmaker of all time after Ingmar Bergman, and he is my favorite actor of all time. I just think he elevates any movie that he's in as an actor, and he's an extraordinary writer and director. I'm obsessed with Albert Brooks, and it's very exciting when I meet people who are Albert Brooks fans. I mentioned it when mm-hmm. we did a recent Wrong Reel episode on Albert Brooks with Jamie Hancock and Kevin Marr. And it was amazing because they're both big Albert Brooks fans. And I kind of feel like people are a little bit cooler when I find out they're an Albert Brooks fan, just because he's a certain type of humor. And I don't meet a lot of them
Definitely,
all the time,
yeah.
But I just think he's just really special. And I'm also like another reason I'm just really bummed he's on that comedy list. I just think for some reason he's not that well known that he should be, and mm-hmm. he definitely should have been on that list. But I work at Sony, and it is very corporate, even though it is a movie studio. And I think that scene where Albert Brooks goes in and he thinks he's going to get this SVP promotion and he doesn't get it. It so rings true to anybody that's ever had a corporate job. I mean, you think you're going to get that promotion and to find out that it's not, went to someone else, that his whole meltdown that ensues after is really amazing. And then a lot of people just want to if it doesn't, they're told that the promotion is going to happen in 6 months or later, they immediately think, let's just drop out. Let's just quit, so I think it's great. And I love how he has that. One of my favorite lines in the movie is when they're trying to convince him to move to New York and to work on a big account.
Four
trucks. And the guy that's the guy from New York is trying to convince him to sing this stupid song, and he finally just says, "Shut up, Brad, your song stunk. I hate your singing, and I can hurt you."
He's terrible.
And it's brilliant. I mean, the whole movie is absolutely brilliant. And I love that Criterion took care of this movie with the release. I mean, all of Albert Brooks' films, he has 7 that he wrote and directed and starred in, and they all are bare bones. They're just essentially there's the movie, there's some bios, and there's a trailer. Mm-hmm. And it's great to have this Criterion, which has got all these supplemental videos a great interview with Albert Brooks done by Bob Whitey, who also directed the recent documentary on Woody Allen, who's amazing. And then there's a bunch of interviews with the cast. And I actually learned a lot listening to all the extras. And one of the things I love about the Criterion release is all the scene selection, with the titles of all the scene selections, because they have titles in the original DVD release, but they're not as funny. But these ones are so funny. Like there's one that's 22 because, his wife loses her money by gambling
22,
on the 22. And then the Desert Inn Has a Heart is a great one if you've seen the movie.
That's good.
And my favorite is there's one called Don't Call Me Retardo. which is the scene where he becomes a crossing guard, which is pretty much the bottom of this guy. I'm not the bottom in life, but this guy was a corporate executive making 150 a year, and now he's a crossing guard making $5 an hour, and there's these kids screaming at him and calling him retardo, and he's like, "Don't call me retardo." And I love that Criterion used that as a title of one of the scenes. It's just, you can tell they definitely spent a lot of time with Albert Brooks, and somebody either who knows him very well, or I don't know if Albert Brooks is the one that named the titles, or somebody that really understands him named them, but
that got his humor for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just perfect. And we definitely went into really in depth on this movie and all of his movies on that recent Wrong Reel episode. So if you're an Albert Brooks fan, I would definitely check it out. And also if you haven't seen any of his films, you're definitely in for just a lot of fun and excitement. And I'm kind of jealous of you that you get to discover his films for the first time, because he's just a treasure.
I agree. And so I have two holes in my viewing. It's real life and modern romance. And I know those are two big ones. I'm just waiting for like a great release for either of them. And then I'm going to jump in. So it's kind of like somebody gave me some grief for having not seen Kurosawa's High and Low. And it's my reasoning is it's there, but I want to experience another Kurosawa in my lifetime for the first time.
Right.
So just I'm going to leave it. It's a treasure, something I
totally agree. My whole motto in life is never too late to discover a great movie.
That's right.
So I'll never get on somebody for not seeing, you know, a movie that we all regard as like a great cinematic achievement. I kind of think of it the other way. Well, I'm just jealous you haven't, you know, you get to see it for the first time.
Yeah.
And there's 6 Bergman movies that he's directed that I've never seen. Some of them I just can't find.
Mm-hmm.
There's 2. One I own and one I just found out is on Filmstruck that I haven't seen. And although I have them, I'm just, I still like there's only a few left that
right.
I haven't seen for the first time. And
I
don't want to spread them out for the rest of my life because I just plow through his movies over a year period. And now I just want to just savor it because, you know, just to see one of his films for the first time, I'm never going to get that chance anymore when, because mm-hmm. he's no longer here.
Well, Albert Brooks is, I think he's a comedy and film genius. I really enjoyed, speaking of the features, the supplements, they looked back in his career. I can't remember if that was his interview. So, and I hadn't seen a lot of that's, you know, the Saturday Night Live, Tonight, Saturday Night Live, Ed Sullivan.
Yeah.
So I kind of went down the rabbit hole on YouTube last night just looking at some
amazing.
Of his old stuff. Boy, that Ed Sullivan ventriloquist thing.
Yeah.
I was dying. It was so funny.
Yeah, me and Dave.
Yeah, and I think of him more as a film guy, you know, with definitely his own brand of humor, but I haven't really seen him in his element as a comedian. I really want to check out his comedy albums. Are they mm-hmm. worthwhile? Have you heard of them?
Yeah, they're great. Yeah, I actually have them. I hadn't seen them. One of them is really hard to find, but one of them is on iTunes. I think A Star Is Bought is on iTunes, and Comedy Minus One is the one that's hard to find. But I have it, so I can share it with you. But Kevin Marr actually helped get me that one. They're definitely worth checking out. And going down the rabbit hole on YouTube is amazing, too.
Yeah,
because
it's fun.
He crafted original bits that, like, he never repeated. Like
mm-hmm.
a mime who couldn't stop talking or an ventriloquist.
Then
there's this great performance he has too where he plays a comedian who's like run out of material, but he refuses to debase himself by getting an easy laugh.
Yeah,
so he like pulls down his pants and gets a pie in the face, and even though he says he won't. And he's done a lot of, I mean, he's just so funny. And the other funny thing is he started out as a comedian, but he's always wanted to be an actor. He didn't really even want to fall into comedy. It just happened because his best friend was Rob Reiner, and Carl Reiner was on Johnny Carson's show and mentioned that the funniest person he knew was his son's best friend. And then Johnny Carson's like, well, who's this? And then they started, you know, talking to him, and he started doing these comedy bits, and also he became this great comedian. But it's just so funny that that's kind of what the route that he had, even though he's always wanted to be an actor.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what he's pretty much doing now, and he's not directing as much now. Really focusing on being an actor, but he's just an extraordinary actor and an extraordinary director mm-hmm. and an extraordinary writer and mm-hmm. comedian. So
very
definitely
talented. Yeah.
Yeah, he's everything, and I just worship him. So this is exciting. This is a good first release for Criterion. I really hope that means that they'll put out his other films on it on Criterion too, because no one else deserves it more than he does.
Yeah, I think there would be a lot of fans of, and a lot of people already talked about Defending Your Life. I don't think it's really been hinted at, but it fits with, you know, thematically with
a
couple other films. It would, yeah.
Like, that's the one that really got me into Albert Brooks as a director, because I knew him mostly as an actor and comedian first, and then I think it was only when I was in university somebody brought in Defending Your Life to show a piece of in one of the classes. And I was like, oh, this is great. I've got to see. I've got to jump in now. So shortly after, saw Modern Romance and then Lost in America. And I really do like him as a director. And it's sort of too bad his filmography. It's so small, because you mm-hmm. kind of wish he did have that like 40 film filmography to jump into. But as is, like, I think that was a really fantastic first release. It's probably... and it might be telling, like, the two Criterion titles I bought from the Barnes & Noble's sale to be shipped up here to Canada were Stalker and Lost in America.
Nice.
Cool. So, nice combo. Double feature there.
They're actually pretty good to watch back to back because they're really? Both about road trips that kind of go awry and go all over the place. And then they kind of just want to go back to the way things were.
You know? I guess, yeah.
What they want you're not really wrong. What they get. so they have some things in common. But yeah, like I think something about his ability, Albert Brooks's ability to kind of marry the completely mundane with the absurd in a way in his films, I find really appealing. Like the sort of naturally absurd, the mm-hmm. observant quality of it, I really enjoy that. I couldn't help but think of a little bit of Stanley Kubrick, like The Shining, while watching Lost in America. Just sort of that very kind of mundane, flattened out quality. And then something outrageous happens or somebody acts in a really outrageous way. Something about that style or the fact that the scenes can play out so long. Like, it's kind of hard to explain, but I kind of like that. I feel like I could count the number of scenes in Lost in America just on my fingers. You know, they kind of play out to their fullest. And
yeah,
you feel like the whole premise of each scene is fully explored and each one moves the story forward in a really great way. And it's just sort of like a great comic premise mm-hmm. in and of itself. Like the scene
like
with
the chapter names. Yeah.
Right.
There might be just 16 scenes and they're all chapters.
Is that how many chapters there were?
No, I've just threw a number out there. Okay. I'm just making stuff up. No, there are a lot. There are a lot more scenes, but like the Vegas scene with Gary Marshall, I mean, mm-hmm. that probably goes on for a good 5-10 minutes. And it's just...
Yeah, it's quite a long scene, him explaining why the casino should give their money back.
Yeah, it's great.
He's describing the billboard with Santa Claus on it.
So funny.
The kind of
he's using his advertising skills to kind of get them to do something that they would never do.
Right.
So funny.
To brand them as a Vegas casino with a heart. and Marshall's great at countering, of course. That makes no sense whatsoever. And of course, people probably ask for their money back all the time. And we're kind of getting into, I don't really think you can spoil the movie. Yeah, so they lose money. Worst gambler ever. If you've ever been to Vegas, don't just bet on one number all the time. But yeah, it's easy to think of this film and just quote scenes too, and with film analysis I try not to do that, but it's just they work so well. This was actually my third time seeing it. I saw it as a kid with my parents, who mm-hmm. my parents probably could relate to the couple, and not that they would, you know, go Easy Rider, but to the hypocrisy and the
yuppie culture.
The yuppie culture too. I think they kind of
very loving couple too.
They were. But also, this was in the 80s, too, and it was very critical of, I guess, some of the capitalistic contrasts with pop culture at the time. And then I saw it again on, you know, years later. Of course, I didn't really understand it. I thought it was somewhat funny when I was a kid, but, you know, it's very much an adult movie. I mean, not adult, but, you know, a mature movie, but not mature. And then I saw it again, and I really came to appreciate it in my 20s. But this was the first time in about 20 years, and I just loved it. It's so great, and it hits all the right chords. And I don't know if maybe it is because of where I am now. So me now at 45, mm-hmm. where my 20-year-old self would be the guy riding the motorcycle by the Winnebago, flipping the guy off. And me at 45, I'm just trying to relate to that guy. It's like, okay, yeah, I get you. I'm with you. And of course they want no part. So yeah, I do get that mentality. And I also, as a corporate guy, you know, you do, of course it is, even though I love my job and I think I have a great career, you do fantasize about the dream of retirement, and it would be nice to just leave it all behind. I'd love to just spend $150,000 and just watch movies for 5 years.
Yeah.
It probably wouldn't stretch with my lifestyle, but the tune in, tune out, drop out mindset.
You're just one Olympic box set away from being without that nest egg.
I might need to actually to get through that set. Yeah, I might need to start calculating my nest egg now. So anyway, I think it is. Now, actually, Andrea, my wife, she's probably not going to be happy with me saying this. She didn't like it that much. She thought it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And maybe it's the first time, and also she. Albert Brooks might not be her style of humor, but she thought it rang a little false. You know, I think them. quoting Easy Rider and it being so ridiculous is part of the charm. The fact that this guy is just, he just has this, he's caught up in the corporate world, but he's also not living in the real world. He's citing a movie that he really shouldn't, his class doesn't really identify with or shouldn't identify with. And I think she thought it was a little ham-fisted the way they did that.
I don't know, because I know so many people, like especially of that generation, who really identified with Easy Rider and felt like, you know, that was a part of their ideals, even as they entered maybe the corporate world or just sort of mature adult life, sort of still felt like, yeah, I'm going to get my motorcycle. And you're always maybe one midlife crisis away from imagining you're back in that situation where, yeah, I'm going to travel across America and just drop out. But like, I think for me, the big part of the joke is that the characters are so ill-equipped for that.
Right.
I lost a whole woman.
Yeah, those little throwaway lines.
I lost a woman.
Oh, that's good. That's good, yeah.
Or like even just the joke about, oh, the guys in Easy Rider didn't have a nest egg. And
yeah,
like,
yeah.
Of course they did. They had the cocaine.
I guess trying to make that equivalence is absurd. The good point about him growing up to...
It's like that idea of just...
Oh, sorry. I didn't realize you were still talking. It's hard to hear you.
It's cutting in and out. But yeah, like I just think that like basic comic premise of facing this fantasy that I know a lot of people had, like I find that really funny to sort of say like, okay, this is what you'd get when you actually do drop out.
Yeah, yeah. It's not as glorified as it should be. But if you think about the characters, so he Albert Brooks's age, I don't know when he was born, but he probably did grow up during the Easy Rider hippie movement, and he probably partook a little bit. So my analogy of my 20-year-old self looking at my mid-40s self and flipping it off is probably very much like the character situation. He probably lived the Easy Rider and lived, you know, inspired by Easy Rider, and probably in the 70s he could have dropped out. But in the 80s with a corporate ad job, he'd worked there for 8 years, so yeah, the timing works out. He certainly could, I mean, I guess he could, but and I guess we're going to get into spoiler territory a little bit. But even if things had worked out and they had gone to New Mexico instead of Nevada, no way this would have lasted more than like 3 years.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I don't think that they were equipped for that. He was born in 1947, and so he just turned 70. But so this movie came out when he was about 38, which means he was, I think he probably made this in his mid-30s, which I think is perfect for it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I just love that the fact that like they drop out, but then they buy this luxury Winnebago, and then like his wife's like, oh, let's buy the junior bridal suite, you know, for they like want to get remarried, but then they end up staying in a Vegas hotel, which is not what he really wants to do. And that whole scene where he's like bribing the Vegas to get the better suite, and he finally is just like, how much do I need to give you? I don't even know how this works. Is great. But one of the things that I think is really great is that scene where he gets out of the Winnebago when they stop at the Hoover Dam, and he totally unleashes on Julie Haggerty because he can't take it anymore.
Classic scene.
Nicholas Winding Refn, who cast him in Drive, saw that as scene when he was a kid and said that it scared him, that he thought Albert Brooks was scary. And that's actually because he never seen so much rage. And so he that's one of the reasons why he thought of him for Drive. But I love that part when he comes out and she's just like, you know, he starts yelling at her at the Hoover Dam, and she's like, I don't want you to yell out here. And he's like, out here? Out where? We live here. He's like, get used to the cement, honey. This is our house forever. And
I love the way that shot's framed too, in long shot with them on opposite ends of the frame. So you just can tell that this is a public fight. Around people, you can't get much more public than the part of the Hoover Dam.
And you see the people running around like, oh my God, this guy's yelling, and everyone's sort of running around. And it's just that whole, like, it's just so perfect. That's one of the reasons I love Brooks too, is he has this classic thing he does in a lot of his movies where he builds up and then he just explodes. And it's just the best when he goes off in like a huge tangent, or like a monologue, or just like everything's sort of built up and he has this whole speech, and it's just great. It's just a really amazing to see, and I love that scene because of it. And then he goes off and tells her the whole nest egg principle and how she doesn't realize that.
Don't even say nest. The words nest or egg.
Yeah.
And so, he's so. Oh, sorry.
No, it's also interesting too that I think Lost in America is Albert Brooks' most accessible film. Like, I think as like the first entry point to see mm-hmm. Albert Brooks. So it's interesting your wife didn't like it. So it's possible that she might just not like him then. Yeah. Like, maybe she might not be into him.
Because I think that's fair. Yeah,
Defending Your Life is just wildly romantic, and it's my favorite Albert Brooks film, and mm-hmm. it's just so amazing. So she might like that because she might like that. But I think to get Albert Brooks's humor and to understand him, I think that's one of the best entry points because I think it's really accessible.
And his humor really is a smart guy, very intellectual, but his humor is that he's just out of touch, just kind of like his comedy scenes are, you know, the mime talking or the ventriloquist who just doesn't even bother to try to hide it. Mm-hmm. Like he probably thinks he's a good ventriloquist, but and as a character, he probably thinks he's very convincing. And, you know, at Hoover Dam, he's making great points and he's convinced of them. The nest egg is, this idealized concept that people shouldn't really can't really grasp other than him, but when you start poking holes into it, hold up, and the character though cannot be, he's so headstrong, and I think that's basically Brooks's comedy. It's mm-hmm. intellectual that's just out of touch, mm-hmm. but doesn't know it, and I think he is poking holes at the 80s the WASP yuppie culture that really emerged there, and we could probably go into that a lot, but I guess we'll keep the show a little shorter.
Yeah.
So I did love the movie on a third watch. I think it's one of my favorite I absolutely agree that it should be on that BBC list, and so that was a good list, but yeah, that's a big omission. So, Martin, did you
agree?
Do you love this movie or like? Or
of course. I love this movie. I mean, yeah, I think so. Yes, even as somebody who's never lived in America or been a yuppie, it's totally appealing. Yeah, maybe could shout out Julie Haggerty. I think like she's really great too.
She's great.
She's wonderful.
Wonderful in the film.
My wife did compliment her. Said, "Oh, but Haggerty gave great performance, and she loves Airplanes. So that maybe that's more her. She loves Top Secret too.
Her hearing collection because she's in." Master Builder, right? Or is she also in?
Oh, is she? Okay.
Is she in another one? Maybe. I'd have to double check. I don't. Do you know the movie The Wife?
No.
The Tom Noonan film with Wallace Shawn. Julie Haggerty's in it. That should be a Criterion film. That's
you're right. She is in Master Builder, but just those two are her only Criterion connection. So, well, anyway, I know you love this, but I should move on. All right, so short takes. It's tough to transition from that. But this is just where we talk about a criterion we've seen lately, and we go alphabetically. So, Becky, do you have anything you have seen that you'd like to talk about?
Yeah, let's talk about Lost in America. No, I'm just kidding. that is the most recent criterion I saw. But I've been plowing through rewatching all of Bergman's movies a lot just because I'm obsessed with him too. But we recently did a Wrong Row episode where we covered the religious trilogy. And so those are the most recent ones besides Lost in America that I've seen Bergman's religious trilogy, which is Through a Glass Darkly, Winter Light, and the silence. So we covered those, and then I'm going to plow into rewatching. We're doing an episode in 2 weeks called The Summer with Bergman, and we're covering Summer Interlude, Summer with Monica, and Smiles of a Summer Night.
Nice.
So those are my criterion world right now is just rewatching my Bergman criterions, which I don't know what better way to live in a criterion world is. So that's really my short takes.
Okay.
Well,
and like we were talking about with other filmmakers like Kurosawa and Brooks, so there are a couple I haven't seen, Silence or Winter Light yet, so those are two I'm saving. So
oh wow, Winter Light's my second favorite Bergman film of all time. You're gonna flip out when you see it.
I love so Through a Glass Darkly is beautiful. So
it's gorgeous. Yeah,
Martin, do you have a short take?
About a different Brooks, Louise Brooks. I just happened to watch Pandora's Box again. I've seen it many times before, but I'm never that far from a Pandora's Box rewatch. It's one of my very favorite silent films. And I'm reading the Louise Brooks biography by Barry Paris right now. I'm halfway through that.
Oh, cool.
I'm supposed to be seeing it in New York in a couple weeks with a live accompaniment, so I'm excited. So it's been a very sort of Louise Brooksy time for me.
You should watch Something
and I'm
Wild.
Sort of in between Berlin Alexanderplatz. I'm rewatching it, so every night or two I'm watching an episode. So I'm halfway through it at the moment, but it's very, very sort of a Weimar Republic set evenings for me.
Ah, boy, that's so you're rewatching. I have not finished Alexanderplatz, so it's you recommend.
I think especially like if you break it up in like it has this reputation of oh it's this like impossibly long 15-hour movie, but it's just a TV show. Watch it like a TV show. Right. It's great. Yeah.
Yeah, it's so intimidating. So I think I haven't finished for that reason. So I'm sure have you seen it, Becky?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, well, 15 hours.
But I mean, most people like I think at this point, like how many hours is the new Twin Peaks? You know, that must be
it's
close
fair.
To 15 hours. You know, I think like most people have watched 15 hours of TV at some point of whatever TV show, and I think it's a really great one. So that might be worth watching if anyone's feeling intimidated by it. I mean, it's pretty dense. There's a lot there, but don't be scared. It's enjoyable in its own way.
I'm not scared. I think it's just trying to find the time. Well, I was going to talk about finishing WCP2, which I did, and it's a great set. So, and in fact, I made a little list of my favorites of all the WCPs. I've seen all of them, but Trances, I think, is the only one I haven't seen. But I took a left turn because I ordered Jacques Becker's Le Trou from Region B, and that was a Criterion, but it went out of print because of Studio Canal. And Studio Canal released it at Region B, and I was like, okay, I'm not ever going to buy a Studio Canal disc, but they're so good and the movies are so great. So I actually watched it last night, and it is phenomenal. I just blown away by how good that movie is. It's basically a prison break, but it's so guttural and so I'm having trouble finding the adjectives, but like there are scenes where they're digging through the prison, and it's like literally nails on chalkboard, and that's kind of bothersome, but it's actually appropriate. You know, it should be bothersome. This is an ordeal, and it really there's some great shots where the long takes. Speaking of at Brooks and like. There's one scene where just a bunch of people are digging, and it keeps on going, and it's a very, very physical endeavor for the actors. So I was actually blown away by this film. So it's among my favorites. Well, I don't want to say among my favorites of the collection, but it's definitely up there. So yeah, that was pretty amazing. And then what's weird is he died before it was released, I think just a couple months prior, and I couldn't figure out what happened because he wasn't that old. So I don't know if it was a car wreck, but yeah, it not disclosed why, at least from what I could find. But anyway, if you can watch Le Trou, or if it comes on Filmstruck, maybe one day, I highly recommend it. Have you seen it, Martin?
I don't think so, no.
Wow, okay, well, I got you. It's not often, so no, Le Trou, I definitely check that one out. It stands for the hole, and they're digging a hole.
Right.
So, and of course, French prison, if they get caught, they're going to be thrown in the hole in solitary. So really, really great movie. So anyway, speaking of Filmstruck, which, of course, Martin, you don't get in Canada. But
no, unfortunately.
Hopefully they will rectify that. But they released their September list, and I'm going to put the link. Ryan put together the list of everything on Criterion Cast, so feel free to look at that. There's some interesting things, some Region B stuff or some Studio Canal stuff that's coming back, at least just on Filmstruck, some WCP titles, some new titles. There's The Headless Woman by Lucretia Martel and some others in that vein, newer films. So go check that out. But Becky, I know you're I don't know if you're as much into the Criterion world, but do you do Filmstruck?
I do. I don't go on it as often. I mean, I think I pay for it, and I actually explored a lot of it this week when when you had me. I didn't even know it offered as much as it did. But I sometimes I use it because I need to watch an episode. I need to watch a movie for a podcast, and mm-hmm. when I'm traveling or something, and I don't have my DVDs, so they have everything usually that I need on there. But I really enjoy it, and it's exciting to figure out that they had so much more content on there besides just just these all the Criterion films that I thought were on there. So thanks for educating me on it this week.
I don't know if it was me, but actually Alicia last week, she being the host of Filmstruck, she kind of curates a lot of these, and mm-hmm. and actually, well, I guess we'll just get right into it. The main channel. Well, I'll start with first films. So Alicia's short take was that she was watching lots of first films from directors, and I didn't even think about. Well, duh, of course she's watching that because it's going to be on Filmstruck. So there we go. One of the collections was first films, and
yeah.
She talked about Blood Simple and I forget what else, but those were on there. It was a pretty good collection.
It was a cool collection, yeah. I need to see The Following again. I really enjoyed it, and I looked at that list and I was like, oh, I definitely got to see this one again. It's been so long that I remember parts of it, but not I definitely need to see it again. But Blood Simple is just mm-hmm. Just an amazing film.
Yeah, I love Blood Simple. And a lot of people hate Nolan. I haven't quite got that, but I think Following is a good movie. Speaking of Reiner, this is Spinal Tap. It's hard to believe that's mm-hmm. a first film. That's a brilliant.
Yeah.
There's Sweetie by Campion, Poison by Todd Haynes, Kronos, which Alicia talked about, and Hunger by Steve McQueen, Malinoche from Gus Van Sant, Eraserhead, The Duelists.
Love it.
Yeah, good stuff. So, Martin, any? I know you don't have this.
Just
so
looking with jealousy.
Sorry.
I have Color of Pomegranates coming up. That's.
Oh yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah, no, I'm mostly just jealous. There's Philip Kaufman movies. There's all kinds of great
Wanderers,
stuff.
Wanderers, yeah, is coming. Boy, they need to get up in Canada. It's probably right. Although
probably.
I think that they could. Yeah. If they get North American.
Because sometimes
rights.
I notice like certain Criterion titles. There will be like an E1 release. Mm. So like clearly somebody had Canadian rights that were separate. So like if you have The Great Beauty, for instance, like I think you have to order that from the States or get like the American copy if you want to get Criterion, because there's like a Canadian edition. So like I'm sure there's
that
some
makes sense.
Sometimes like the rights are probably okay, other times not. Like I sort of suspect if they do, it might be a little bit like Netflix where there's like a Filmstruck Canada where it doesn't have everything that the main Filmstruck has, or it might have some different things, but that might be a complicated venture.
Yeah, they're probably
The Atomic Submarine. That's
I know,
a fun one.
A lot of good stuff. They're probably still fine tuning the American. I think they really are still working on the bugs. I think the content is really up to speed. This is a great week here, and I think they're really hitting their stride in that department. But Roku still has a couple bugs from what I understand, so they might want to perfect this. And then, rather than launch a new service, because I think you're right. I think they probably would have to. And then, is it worth it? Would they profit? I think that there would be a lot of Canadian subscribers. I'm talking to one.
Mm-hmm.
But, so we'll see. Hopefully one day. So there's another list going into labor. I thought this was another interesting curation. It was all about labor movements, labor unions. So there was Harlan County, USA, Barbara Koppel. There was Salt of the Earth by Bieberman, very, very union-oriented. And The Devil Miss Jones from Sam Wood, which we'll talk about in a second. Norma Ray, I haven't seen that, by Martin Ritt. Have you seen that, Martin?
No, I think of the ones you mentioned, I might have only seen Harlan County, USA, but that's one of my favorite documentaries, so
it's
I might have to look into these.
There's also Chance of a Lifetime, Native Land, and I'm All Right, Jack. So I've only seen three of those. Yeah, good stuff. Good curation. The thing is, there's so many I don't get to them. So, Becky, have you seen any of these?
I've seen a few of them. I really like the title "Going into Labor." It's such a clever title.
Yeah.
When I first saw it, I'm like, "Oh, is this about?" I thought it was about like pregnancy.
Me too.
And then I was like, "Oh, this is so cool. This is about labor relations." So I thought that was that was really nice. I thought that was really clever.
Yeah, and I do like how they put a little spin on it too. And so then the last one, and this is just in the main channel, they've had the director of the week. So this week was Sam Wood, and he of course is the director of Pride of the Yankees, is the one he's most famous for, and sadly it's the only one of this collection I've seen. So they have about seven titles of his. So Becky, have you seen Sam Wood?
No, I haven't seen any of these. I definitely need to explore him. I haven't seen any of those seven movies.
Well, Pride of the Yankees is a pretty big one. if you're into baseball or Alzheimer's, or wait, Lou Gehrig.
Or Alzheimer's, yeah. Sorry. That's a hobby of mine.
Lou Gehrig. It's not Alzheimer's. I'm sorry. Anybody I offended did not make that connection. But Martin, have you seen that?
I don't think so, no.
You haven't seen Pride of the Yankees either?
I don't think so, no.
Really? Okay. Yeah, it's very American. Gary Cooper. Yeah. I'm not as
especially a baseball person. I think I don't know. There aren't that many baseball films. What's the one? Eight Men Out.
Oh, that's
the
a good one.
That one I really like. But I'm not usually a baseball person.
I think baseball makes pretty good movies, but with this, I am sort of a baseball fan. But the thing is, knowing the real story, and the big moment is when he makes the speech on the field about his disease and him having to retire. So I've heard the real speech, and it's very, very moving. I think even if you're not a baseball fan, if you just listen to how solemn and earnest that is, it's hard to not emote. Or emoji.
Check it out.
But Gary Cooper, Gary Cooper impersonating that. Gary Cooper's okay actor, I guess. But I still like the real story. I prefer a documentary. But anyway, I'm sure Sam Wood is a great director. So let's get to Criterion Channel. Yay!
Yay!
such enthusiasm. So we had Adventures in Movie Going, which with Michael Cunningham, who is the author of The Hours and a number of other novels. I like that they bring people from outside of the Criterion Circle. This month they're coming out. They're going to have Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, which is I can't wait to see that one. So this was okay. It was interesting. Did you get to watch it, Becky?
Yeah, I liked it a lot. I liked how the whole discussion about horror movies, how he talked about he's like just a horror movie nut.
Yeah.
And then he's like, he doesn't understand why people doesn't understand why everybody doesn't go to horror movies. He's like, why wouldn't you want to spend 2 hours being terrified and then return to safety? And I love horror films. I'm going to see it on Tuesday night. I cannot wait to see it. But yeah, I'm the same way. And I kind of feel that too. I always get perplexed. I'm like, wait, you don't like horror movies? Why would you not like horror movie? I also watched his little snippet where he did like a take on Scenes from Marriage. Obviously I wanted to hear what he said about that. Because it's a favorite Bergman film of mine. So I thought it was really fascinating. I really enjoyed listening to that.
Yeah, he was. There have been some really, really good ones. So it's a pretty high bar for these collections.
Yeah.
But I did like that. Yeah, he wasn't afraid to talk about the high art and also the indulgence. And it was Monda, right? Antonio Monda? Yeah. Who's a very good interviewer. But and then at one point he asks him, what's your guilty pleasure? And Cunningham says, well, I already told you Saw. So what else do you need? That was fun. And he did have some good choices. I think he had some Renoir, so that's close to my heart. And speaking of which, the short plus feature was A Propos Denis, from Jean Vigo, and Land of Milk and Honey, which is a documentary by Pierre Ité that I wanted to see and I didn't get to, but big fan of A Propos Denis. So, Becky, have you seen either of these?
I saw the short. I really liked it a lot. It sort of was relaxing watching, people doing relaxing things against French music and people dancing and people laughing. And I liked how the music stopped at that scene where people were reading on the boardwalk or falling asleep. It was cool stuff too, where like when they would show a woman at a chair, like in different outfits, and then all of a sudden she'd be naked.
Yeah.
Or there was a guy that was getting his shoes shined and all of a sudden his shoes disappeared. It was really, I thought it was intriguing and I enjoyed it. And it was like 20 some minutes long. I'm glad I saw it.
Yeah. It's actually a very political documentary and it's actually very subversive. Vigo was basically an anarchist slash socialist. So there's a lot watched that a few times, big fan, but, Martin, have you seen either of these?
I've seen them both. Land of Milk and Honey is really interesting cause it's really different from what you might expect from Pierre Ité. It's in that box set, right? With the
I think so. I really like Ate, but I just haven't. I think if it is, it's at the end. But I'll check.
That's really great. And apropos Denise, I kind of like just how sort of energetic and how it's edited. Like, I really like that style. Like, it sort of reminds me a little bit of like Terrence Malick's recent films, where it's very sort of spontaneous and the images kind of twirl and move and interconnect in unexpected ways. So, like, visually, it's a really interesting film. Yeah,
that's a good comparison, Terrence Malick.
And it was in the set, so that was the last film. So that's why I haven't gotten to it. I love his other stuff, though. It's very comparable to it's not very much like Vigo, but very much like Tati. In fact, I think he worked with Tati a little bit. I would recommend Yo-Yo. It's a very, very funny film. And then there was Art House America, and I really like how they do these little – I think they've done them like every other month. They'll go visit a art house theater somewhere, and I think they did New York. I think they did – they do Boston. No, I think they did D.C. or somewhere, but Juneau, Alaska. So it's a very, very small theater. So I actually could identify because it was kind of like the art house theater we have. Actually, ours I think is a little bigger. Did you watch this, Becky? Or
no, I'm bummed I didn't watch it. Actually, I need to go back and watch all these little movie theaters and the small town little stories because sounds great. I don't know why I just didn't get a chance to see it,
no
but
problem.
Sounds good. Maybe I'll see it when we finish this episode.
Yeah, or maybe at lunch.
Yeah.
Although with podcasts coming up, probably not. But the yeah, it's pretty short. It's about 10 minutes. The thing with this is Juneau, Alaska is actually not a very accessible place. So, and it has population for Alaska, that is, but not, it's not like, you know, anywhere close to a metropolis. So, you know, it's a very small theater, and they're just talking about how they make it sustainable to the I guess sustainable really for the locals, because you have to get people into the theater. It's interesting, and it has a long history, so I enjoyed it. But so anyway, we'll get to the rest of things. We had actually three Digital Spines this week, so I can't delve into all of these, but we had the Marseille trilogy, the In-Laws, and Bottle Rocket. So Martin, pick one and say something.
Oh, the Marseille trilogy is really great. I think what to say about it. I don't, people should watch those. Like, I think that the box that's really fantastic. The three films are sort of connected, so it makes sense to watch all three together. And they look fantastic, and it's just great seeing images from that era. I would recommend that one.
Yeah, great set. I finished it a few weeks ago, and I was really taken by it. And even though that's my kind of my thing is 30s French, but really enjoyable. Becky, do you have any comments on Marseille, In-Laws, or Bottle Rocket?
Bottle Rocket is Wes Anderson's first film. It's really, really hilarious. It's very, very good film. And it's kind of funny because my first Criterion that I ever got was Rushmore. So it was Spine 65, and I got it in 1999. A friend gave it to me, and I remember thinking how cool it was that this director that was relatively new got a Criterion release when, like, you know, Albert Brooks is, you know,
right,
70 and doesn't have any. He has one now. But it's crazy. Like, what all of Wes Anderson's films, like, now when they come out, I just wait for them to come out on Criterion because I know Criterion will take care of them.
Absolutely.
So sometimes we have to wait a little while. But, you know, I have all of his films on Criterion except for Bottle Rocket. So I'll have to get that one, but it's really worth checking out. And there's this great still of Owen Wilson I can't remember his name, walking out of Thalberg, which is a building that my husband works in at Sony Pictures, and a building that I have a lot of meetings in. There's this great thing where they just got the green light for Bottle Rocket, and they're walking out of Thalberg, and it's a fun picture, especially because that's where I work. That's my little two cents.
You know, I could see Bottle Rocket being a little bit like Albert Brooks's blend of humor. And now, it's not like the intellectual type of humor, but it's more the situational, like letting things happen and just the awkwardness of the scene. Course, I'd say that Wes Anderson, as he got further away from that, definitely is not too much like Albert Brooks today. But I think he's absolutely worthy of having his titles in the collection, and is Brooks. And then finally we had a Friday double feature, which was Othello and All Night Long, which was – that was Dearden, right? Yeah, Basil Dearden, which I haven't seen. And I have seen Othello. But, Martin, this seems up your wheelhouse. Do you have anything for these two?
Oh, these are pretty dark films.
Literally or figuratively? or both?
Well, All Night Long, I think it's about jazz music, right? If that's the film I'm thinking of.
Yeah, I haven't seen it, but it is about the jazz scene in London.
That's really interesting. It's been a while since I've seen it. I should give that a rewatch. And then I think Othello, people know what that's all about.
Shakespeare in black and white. Very, yeah, very inky.
Dark, shadowy, yeah. Dark story. Yeah.
Yeah, very, very Orson Welles, but actually even inkier than a lot of, although Kane and Shanghai, they're pretty inky. All right, well, that's the show. So, except for the piece of flair, which that's really become the funnest, the most fun part of the show, I think, at least for me. So, Becky, do you have a piece of flair? This is just anything that's not Criterion that you think is cool or fun.
Yeah, I just wanted to touch on really quickly. There's been a lot of articles that have come out recently about not recently, in the last week, about how the box office this summer has been just the worst. And it's an interesting summer, because just being at a movie studio to know that this is one of the worst box offices, and worse than the last 3 years, actually. But one of the things that is great about it, one of the things great about it for Sony is Sony actually had Spider-Man Homecoming and Baby Driver this summer, and even the Emoji Nice. Movie, all of those films did incredibly well. So Sony had a great summer. Mm-hmm. But as a movie fan, I think that although these movies aren't, you know, tearing apart box office records, what I thought it was a great movie to be a great summer to be a movie fan. Mm-hmm. Because there was a lot of great, great films that I saw this summer, like Logan and Detroit, The Big Sick, It Comes at Night. I love those films. Wonder Woman was terrific. And my favorite film of the summer was Ghost Story, which I know Dave Eves talked mm-hmm. about. A few episodes ago. It's probably not in the theaters anymore, but that's the best film I've seen all year. It's probably going to make my top 10 list. I just was floored by it. But it was interesting, because like this summer, it seems like animated movies did well, and non-franchise adult skewing movies like Dunkirk and Baby Driver did well. Mm-hmm. So it was an interesting summer. But I think as a film fan, you know, even like Wind River and Annabelle Creation, like I really enjoyed all those movies, you know, Atomic Blonde. So I thought there was a lot of great movies that came out this summer. So I think as a movie fan, it's promising that there are some well-reviewed great films coming out.
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of franchise fatigue. I think some of the, like Transformers didn't do as well, but people are used to Transformers making $1 billion. It still made a lot of money, but not like,
yeah,
not based on previous incarnations. But yeah, I'm with you. I've seen those articles, and I've seen lots of, yeah, through the years, it seems like every year some critic or culture writer will say cinema's dead. But there's still great movies coming out. Sure, you know, every year there are some years that are amazing, some years that are good, some not so good. And I'd say this, you know, some films getting away from franchises like Baby Driver and doing well, and those being the tentpole adventure movies. I think that's a good thing. I think studios should take more chances. Although
Agreed.
that's always a debate, you know, the
studios
are by nature conservative and want to be safe and not risk too much. But on the other hand, you have to take risks to get success.
Yeah, and to say that studios, I think it's funny when you read articles and they're like, oh, well, studios are going to change it up because of this just happened. It's like a studio putting a movie into production, it's going to take like 3 years for it to come out. It's
right.
Not like it can affect everything right away. But I mean, the movies that did well this summer had strong reviews and word of mouth, like Wonder Woman and Guardians mm-hmm. of the Galaxy and Logan and Get Out didn't even come out in the summer. It opened in February, but it played well all summer. And so, you know, for a movie to succeed, it needs a strong opening weekend and a strong second week sales. But all that correlates to reviews and good word of mouth, which really means good movies. So I think as a movie fan, we should all be happy that we got some great ones this summer. Mm-hmm. And hopefully that translates to the fall as well.
And I haven't seen it, but The Big Sick did very well for an indie film. And
yeah.
there were some other indie films. I don't have the list in front of me, but I just remember there have been a few that have done pretty well. A couple, mm-hmm. I think Ghost Story didn't do well. And Lucky Logan didn't do well.
I don't think it did either, yeah. Yeah, I'm actually still need to see Lucky Logan. I heard it's great.
That's what I've heard too. So
that's on my list to see right now. It's
a good piece of
catch it in a week or two. I think you mentioned it's coming out this week, right?
Yeah,
yeah, it's coming out
I'm
Friday.
Excited for that. I think that looks really scary. I want to see it.
So, Martin, do you have a piece of flair?
I guess I might just give one more shout out to the Louise Brooks biography by Barry Paris. It's a little bit dry, but it's really interesting, informative, if you're interested in Louise Brooks at all. Actually, maybe if people are interested, the best place to start might be Lulu in Hollywood, because her own writing about Hollywood's really, really fantastic.
Huh.
I think she was a great writer, too, as well as a great actress. But
yeah, she is
an interesting figure.
Quite a personality. She has that look. Very distinctive figure, iconic.
She had a little bit of a notorious personality, but I find her fascinating. Her life, like her success and her time at the very top of film was sort of so brief, but she had such an interesting life, both before and after.
Yeah. That reminds me, one of the silent movies I want to watch next is Diary of a Lost Girl. So hopefully I'll get to that.
Have you seen it before?
I have not, no.
Okay. I think that's probably not going to come from Criterion, because I think maybe Kino Lorber or somebody like that just put it out in America.
I already have the
Region B one, which is, I think there was like some kind of a controversy about the aspect ratio being a little bit wonky for the North American release, but people always like pick on stuff like
There's
that.
Always
but,
something.
The UK one looks really great. I think, I forget if it's Masters of Cinema or
I think it is. That's the one I have.
Fantastic. I might even like that one like a little bit more than Pandora's Box. I was sort of flip flop depending what mood I'm in, but it's maybe a little bit lighter than Pandora's Box.
Cool. Well, yeah, I can't wait. Although so many movies, so little time. But
they just released Beggars of Life on Blu-ray too, so it's good if you're a Louise Brooks fan right now.
Like you said,
it's a good time.
What a time to be alive, right? It's a great bookends to the show. So, well, my piece of flair is we had a lot of TV finales, and so this last week was Game of Thrones, and I don't know if you're fans. This season was a little uneven, I'd say weaker than most, and there's some things they did that I didn't agree with. What's that, Martin?
Only just finished season 4. I'm way behind.
Well, it's still worth watching, but you know, I think it peaks around 3, and there's some good moments. So keep going. But but then of course Twin Peaks. We're recording this on Sunday. This will be out by the time the Twin Peaks finale has already aired. I'd be pretty I'm surprised if it's anything short of amazing. I think it basically has essentially become the television event of the year, at least in our circles. I've really enjoyed it, even though Doug is to blame for me watching it wrong. So are you guys watching Twin Peaks? Or
I don't have Showtime, so what I hope to do is just kind of plow through it when I can, like get Showtime streaming, and then just, you know, I know it's a lot of hours, but do it at that point, because I absolutely love David Lynch. I just didn't sign up for Showtime for it specifically, and I feel so out of the loop because all these people who I just really admire and really like talking to are all talking about it, and it's a bummer not to be having conversations about David Lynch, who I really like. Mm-hmm. So, but I mean, I also have limited time, free time too, so I definitely want to check it out, and it's nice to know after the fact that it is so engaging and exciting. So I will definitely do that. But and Game of Thrones, I've been watching, I'm caught up, but I did think this season there was a little bit of predictability with this show, with the season, but you know, it's good. I'm not like a huge Game of Thrones fan. I what my husband is. I'm just not really a fantasy person. I like the show though. It's interesting and fun, and I definitely like watching it. It's just not like, you know, it's not like Battlestar Galactica or Star Trek. Like my head's gonna explode when like Star Trek Discovery comes out on September 24th. But it's definitely, like I said, worth seeing, and nice to have engaged in that conversation because so many people watch it.
Yeah, it is fun, and yeah, Twin Peaks. Yeah, I think you're fine. The one thing is you can't really spoil Twin Peaks because it's so strange. And if you haven't been on this 16-episode journey, hearing something from eight, well, you might want to be careful about some bomb shows on the internet. There could be something from the finale. But yeah, really, really, if you enjoy film, I think you would like the film or the show. So, all right, that's it. So, Becky, where can people find you online?
Oh, they can find me on Twitter at H-Wood Minotaur. H-Wood stands for Hollywood. I'm on Twitter quite a lot. I love talking to film fans about anything from Terminator to Ingmar Bergman to Albert Brooks to James Cameron to Star Trek, anything you guys want to talk about. I'm a geek all around. So reach out.
I love how your tastes are just all over the place. It's awesome.
Yeah, they're just the most eclectic tastes, and I wouldn't have it any other way.
You have great taste. So, Martin.
And go see. Blade Runner. It comes out October 6, 2017. Well, this year. Jesus, I don't know if it's this year.
Yeah, it's.
It's called Blade Runner 2049. It's the sequel to Blade Runner. And Sony's releasing it internationally, which I'm from international.
Awesome.
And I work in international. And Warner Brothers releasing it domestically. But that is very soon. So go check it out.
Yeah, don't be confused, people. Be sure. Don't wait 32 years to see it. It's actually coming out this year. Martin, where can people find you online?
You could find me over on Twitter at Movie Kessler. I tweet a lot about movies. And over at FlixWise.com, where you can check out the FlixWise podcast. There's a bunch of great episodes in the works. So,
cool.
Yeah, people should check those out if they're interested in film and film-related
Absolutely.
Topics, I guess.
Film and film-related topics.
We did an episode together.
We did an episode recently. Yeah, we did an episode on Amelie. We're recording this right now on Jean-Pierre Jeunet's birthday. So that's...
Oh, cool.
That's cool. Yeah, that's a really good one. If people like listening to Becky, they should definitely check out that episode. It's really, that's a fun one.
We just gushed about it for like an hour.
It's nice just to like gush about a film and not pick it apart.
it's kind of fitting with the film too. It's just delightful. So, all right. Well, I don't tweet as much these days. I kind of miss out on some of your great conversations, but I try to keep up a little bit. So I'm at AWest505 on Twitter. You can find the show on the Criterion Cast Master Feed, or you can find us Criterion Now in iTunes. I, of course, join the Facebook group and interact with us on all the fun stuff with Criterion. And that's it. So there won't be a show next week. We have something else planned that'll show up in the Master Feed. I think I hope people will appreciate it. It's or people might hate it, actually.
That sounds mysterious.
Yeah, intriguing.
Yeah, I'll tell you after the episode. It's pretty cool. So. Anyway, thanks for joining. Great show. Appreciate it.
Thanks.